Welcome to the Voices of the West, hosted by Emil Franzi and dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
Hello, Tucson. This is Joe Dreyfus and my good friend, what's your name, the sheep herder from New Mexico, the bass guy?
Is this question from the Don Anna Cowboy?
That's it.
Okay, well, it's Bunker, and I'm happy to be here, and I hope the emails stuck around for this.
I stuck around long enough to say the following. Guys, I am honored and privileged to have both of you handle a subject you know a hell of a lot more about than I do.
Well,
and
do
I'm
the fact.
Get, and I'm gonna, well, there comes a time when you know when to shut up and get out of the way, and that's exactly what's going to happen. So I want you guys to. I know how well you're going to treat this guest, and I know how well you're going to follow up on the subject because you've been at these places.
Absolutely. And my dad played music for just about all of them. Mm-hmm.
And I met Russell here last week, a real gentleman, and it's going to be a pleasure to talk with him.
All right, guys, go for it. I'll be listening in.
Okay.
Russell True, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you?
I'm old and decrepit, but I just am delighted with this book you've put together. Job well done, sir.
And I'm just finer than frog's hair and twice as curly, and I love the book as well. I tell you, I thought I knew a lot, which I don't really do, but I learned so much, and a lot of the stuff is just what's in between the lines there.
Now, Russell, my dad played music. Now, you're from the White Stallion Ranch, correct?
Right.
You guys are still out there, correct?
Yeah, we've been here 51 years. I just don't have any other skills, so I have nowhere to go but here.
Well, my dad played music out there many times for weddings, and I do believe for your winter crowd several times. The issue he had is it's too far from St. David, Arizona out there.
Right.
Well, you know, when I was out there, I worked out there years ago on Chaparral and whatever happened to Ann Dallas. And I've got to tell you, Russell, the place is beautiful. You've got a lovely setup. You know, great people out there. Your lovely wife, who helped you type this thing.
Well, she showed me all the technology. You know, typing is more in my era than hers. And she tried to teach me and then ended up just really sort of doing a lot of it for me. But
Russell,
it was a great process.
What motivated you to put this book together? And ladies and gentlemen, it's Dude Ranching in Arizona, Images of America, Dude Ranching in Arizona, and it's written by Russell True. So what motivated you to put this all together, my friend?
Well, it just sort of happened. And the way it happened was Arcadia Publishing, which works out to be the biggest publisher of these special interest history books. They've done over 9,000 titles, and they're terrific at marketing and making sure that these books really representing American history all across the country.
Now, this is
get
one of the best ones I've
those
seen.
Those who care. Sorry?
I said this book here is one of the best ones I've seen.
Well,
we have one on the Empire Ranch, and it's also one of the best, but this is just, it's marvelous.
Well, I was just at an event today with the author of the Empire Ranch book, but you asked me what motivated me, and it was, you know, people said, were you afraid somebody else would do it? And I said, no, actually, I was afraid no one would do it. And Dude Ranches have a little bigger role than I think most people think.
Amen.
And being a Dude Rancher, I wanted to make sure it was out there and given an opportunity to be seen and heard.
Now, we just had a caller that left a message. It said, the term Dude Ranch comes from where?
So if you looked it up, in the sources, it would say derivations of words. There are several explanations, and I've read, I'm guessing most or all of them. But the one that I believe is the original Dude Ranch was the Eaton Brothers Ranch, originally called the Custer Trail Ranch in the Dakota Territory, founded in 1887. And so back then, I mean, this is 1800s, not so long after Custer's. In fact, it was called Custer Trail because that's the route they took into the Bighorn, was on that ranch. And so these Easterners, and Midwestern, but a lot of Easterners were coming out, and this was a long, expensive journey that involved time and money. And so these were not middle class or impoverished or working class people. These were the wealthy and the elites. And so they came out, and they came out dressed in a certain way, and the Eatons would say, wow, they're all duded up. And ultimately, Howard Eaton, one of the three brothers who was sort of the most prominent of those guys, said, I just started calling them dudes. And it was because they came duded up, which was an Eastern term to describe, you know, sort of elaborate dress.
Right. You know, what's fascinating to me is when I was a little boy and I come from a ranching family, and my grandfather and Jim Converse were best buddies.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so my grandparents own what is now the Catalina State Park. Okay, as a child, if somebody had called me a dude in our vernacular, I'd have knocked their teeth out. Because, you know, that's for reserved for the people that go to dude ranches. And I it's always fascinated me how the word dude has, I don't know, changed through our lifetime.
The movies have really contributed a lot to the image of the dude, too. You know, that he was always the goofy guy that didn't fit in. But I always like to remember Marty Robinson, cowboy in a continental suit.
Right. Right. So, well, I, you know, from my perspective, I've been doing this, been around it for 51 years, and saw Tucson go from 20 plus dude ranches in the local area to two, ourselves and Tankaverde now.
Right.
We've seen that word sort of like a fashion come into fashion and out of fashion, and or into fad and out of fad. And, you know, when I was a kid, we were dude ranches, and then in the 60s, that word started to get used in a lot of ways that weren't necessarily positive for a dude ranch, and so we all became guest ranches.
Yeah, the drug culture.
People's get nostalgic, and history of dude ranching gets longer and farther away, and the word comes back into fashion.
Yeah. How have the guests changed in your lifetime, if any?
Well, I mean, they've changed a lot. I think one of the most glaring examples is that early on, and this predates us, but also in the early days of my tenure and my family being here, the guests came and stayed for a really long time. And some of them were really intensely interested in riding, and others moderately, and some not at all. So they would come, particularly here to Arizona, for the weather and the camaraderie and the simplicity and the authenticity, all those things. But these people would stay 3 weeks to 7 months. We had guests who'd stay our entire season. We used to be open October to April. That doesn't exist anymore.
It makes me think, like in Nevada, the dude ranch industry was kind of built up around the divorce industry up there.
Right. Yeah, there's a book written just about that. I can't think of the name suddenly, but that's right. They would go stay there just so they would get the tenure to get divorced.
And a lot of cowboys married divorcees.
Yeah, I bet they did. But, you know, today I think here at our ranch, and it doesn't make us unique, our guests come from all over the world. There isn't a week in our year, we're open year-round now, that there isn't a guest from England or the UK in general. There are guests from all over Europe and other countries, Australia, New Zealand, et cetera. Our guests are working class, middle class, wealthy folks. They stay from, most people don't stay for less than three nights, but most of them stay for a week or two. But
yeah,
it's
well,
a broader
exactly.
demographic, more interest in horses, and definitely international.
Yeah, when I was out there, I met a Brit that was one of your guests that had just come back from the trail ride.
Right. Oh, sure. I mean, at times like now, I mean, if you were at the ranch in September, 60-70% of the guests might be English. My wife's English.
So, I didn't know that.
Well, she was. She isn't anymore. She's an American citizen.
Yes, well, now this is I interviewed a 99-year-old cowboy by Sonoyta this week. that is just sharp as a razor. And the, what was it, the Flying W, that's up by Wickenburg, correct?
Right.
Well, world's champion cowboy Buckshot Sarles worked a winter up there and had a total, you know, like
Ben Johnson's team roping partner.
Right. you know, just had a blast up there working that one
sure.
year. And now, if I'm not mistaken, I think Tankaverde, somebody made a mention that they had over 50 Wranglers. How many Wranglers do you have on your outfit?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Tankaverde had 50 Wranglers. But we have about, at any time, 8 to 12. You know, we run about 100 guests at full capacity. Tankaverde is one of the biggest in America. They could have over 200 guests. Mm-hmm. Generally, you look at a ranch, they're going to have a Wrangler for about every 8 to 10 guests. Not everybody's going to ride at the same time, and it's sort of a conventional ratio.
Well, we've got to get to a break here, so Harry's going to put us on break. Hang on, Russell.
I'll be here.
Voices of the West will be right back.
Who is the tall dark stranger there? Maverick is the name. Riding the trail to who knows where. Luck is his companion. Gambling is his game. Smooth as a handle on a gun. Maverick is the name. Wild as the wind in Oregon. Blowing up a canyon. Easier to tame.
Welcome back to Voices of the West.
And we're back. I'm with my buddy Bunker de France, and we're interviewing Russell True, owner of White Stallion Ranch, but he has written a delightful, delightful book, Images of America, Dude Ranching in Arizona. And I got to tell you, I'm looking at some of your photographs, Russell, and this is gonna should make you laugh a little bit. I open to Tankaverde Guest Ranch, of course, because I had such a long association there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my granddad and Jim Converse were buddies. The man that Jim Converse shot was actually part of the family that my grandparents bought that ranch from, the Romeros. And the man that was shot, his family actually stayed with my family for about 6 months, lived with us. And wow. Then I open the book, and I look, and I view the very first girl that ever broke my heart. And it's on page 37, and it shows Jan Neubauer with Mary and Ernie Austin. She refused to dance with me when I was 6 years old. My dad was playing music.
She ran had this, good taste.
Well, that may be true. Her dad was a doctor. Her brother's a doctor. But my dad, you know, people don't understand the economic impact that comes from our two area guest ranches. Mm. My dad taught the summer camp, kids camp, riding and shooting. There's always entertainment that you guys bring in. The amount of feed that goes to keep your string of horses, it just goes on and on and on. Your financial impact, the greater Tucson area, has just been wonderful for the last half century.
Well, we thank you for that. I mean, I think one of the things that makes it more impactful is that it's the skills that we need at Dude Ranch is often are falling in demand in other areas, and so people who have some horse skills and some other specific types of hospitality experience can get jobs at Tankaverde and White Stallion and ranches like us. And particularly in the rural places, that might be a hard job to find in today's economy.
That's real interesting because, you know, if you look at the history of cowboys into Tucson, throughout the 20s and 30s, even earlier, the northern cowboys, because the ranches would shut down, they would come down here and snowbird, and they would work the rodeos, the guest ranch, the racetrack. They'd do the rodeo parade. Then they and in the movies as well. And, you know, this was a good place to winter.
Oh, of course.
You know, some of the things that are in this book, ladies and gentlemen, are very near and dear to my heart. And you open it to page 38, and lo and behold, I use this. I have a radio show on tomorrow. I use this as a trivia question. Where was Desert Willow Ranch, which is no longer in existence? But we probably ought to ask them, where is El Carnelia Ranch?
Right.
Well, you know, tell us a little bit about the Colt family, because I was reading this and I didn't realize they started out with two summer camps in Minnesota, and then they bought a lodge, and then they ended up down here in Arizona with a ranch, dude ranch up in Wickenburg, and one down here. That's quite a little empire.
Right. And you know, they really, Bob Colt, which is, you know, more my contemporary, I didn't even know Brownie, but Brownie, he and his wife started with the Boys and Girls Camp, Camp Lincoln, et cetera, in the Minnesota area, in Minnesota. And then they added the Grandview Lodge. And they've really, that family's expanded it, and it's really quite the property up there now. And they were really trying to find employment for their staff.
Yeah.
You know, and probably not any, at least to a lesser degree, their horses. And they used to put everything in the trucks and bring them to Tucson. I mean, the horses, the vacuum cleaners, the sheets. And, of course, it gave them an opportunity to employ their people. So they bought the Triangle W with a partner, Everett. I think his name was Everett Bennett. And then they also bought the Desert Willow in Tucson. And Desert Willow was really, Charles Everett was his partner, but it was really one of the prominent ranches in the Tucson area, and that's saying a lot, because Tucson really was the dude ranch capital of the world, and in the 40s and 50s and into the 60s, still pretty important.
Well, I saw here was just interesting about Bob, that he's the first and only dude rancher induced into the Arizona Hall of Fame for tourism, and he was also in 2012 inducted into the Dude Ranchers Hall of Fame. That's pretty impressive.
Well, it is, and it's because I think people recognize that Bob Colt was a pioneer often. And so his father, we'll go back to Brownie just really briefly, he saw that Tucson was growing as it has, and that wasn't real great insight to watch Tucson explode outward as it did and just run over ranches and property as the expansion happened. And so, but he saw that happening, and he saw the pressure that was coming toward Desert Willow. So he bought from your grandfather's friend Jim Converse Tankaverde Ranch, I think in 1947, because he realized that its proximity to the national property, both the park and the Forest Service, would make the ranch viable basically forever. So Tankaverde was kind of their second property in Tucson until Desert Willow closed in 68, and all the emphasis shifted to Tankaverde. Bob Colt was lured out of a master's thesis in Japan. He was in Japan doing a master's thesis on the language, Japanese. And his mother said, just give us a year, Bob. And he came back, never left. And he pioneered international travel. He created the idea that Tucson was a year-round destination. Mm. And, you know, that was dude ranching, but that expanded into the resorts. He found ways, depending on the way people were buying travel in whatever era he was doing it, he found ways to get the international people here. And that's why he's been recognized by the state, and then Dude Ranching recognized him. We have our annual convention. We're going to be there in January with all the Dude Ranchers from the West meeting at Tankaverde. They recognize that he did it differently than they do up in the pine trees, but they realize that he did it well, never, ever compromising quality, and so that's how he became. My parents share that honor as members of the Dude Ranch Hall of Fame.
You're a past president, aren't you, of the Dude Ranch Association?
Yeah, twice, yeah. And yeah. Rita Cote, Bob's wife, is about to be president. She'll be president in January. So
here, I got one for you.
Yes.
I actually ate the very first pancake dinner that Bob made. Yeah.
Well, you know,
yeah,
well,
buddy, top that deal. One, huh?
Well, I've got a coffee cup from the Lazy K bar.
Well, you know, we love Lazy K. We're sad that it's not operating. Yeah. But, you know, that's a big deal. Bob still does the pancake breakfast over there, so that's a pretty high honor.
You know, it's fascinating because my dad worked for Bob a lot, and he played music at 49ers, Desert Willow, Tankaverde. Yeah. Tankaverde, I was telling Bunker before we went on air, he played the Cottonwood Groves, I believe, for 30 years. And he finally, I was talking with Bob, and he said, yeah, it broke my heart when your dad said he wasn't going to play music here anymore. He quit me, and I said, Bob, you had him in the Cottonwood Groves where the guests have heaters, and he's front stage, and his fingers were freezing so bad that he was getting older. He couldn't take it anymore. And Bob was kind of, he said, oh, that's kind of a relief. But no, he's you know, both you guys really take care of the guests and roll out the desert red carpet. Hey, buddy, hang on. We got to go to break.
All right.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly jimson weed. I'm back in the saddle again.
Voices of the West will be right back.
My name is Rudy Ramos. I played Wind in season 4 of the High Chaparral. And thank you for listening to Voices of the West.
And we're back. We're with author Russell
True.
True. I tripped on my tongue here.
Yeah, it's like
Russell, this is kind of fascinating. As I go through, I don't know where you collected all these photos. What a great job. When I was a child, the Flying V was still going. We lived on Tankaverde Road. And the Double R, now they turned that into another facility, did they not?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I some of the photos came out of the Arizona Historical Society, and we'd pick any really interesting photo, and then we'd try and backtrack it because you needed two things. You needed a photo and you needed a story because it's a book of photos and captions. And so if you didn't have one or the both, or if you didn't have both, you didn't have either. So I had some great photos of the Double R and I could not find anything about the Double R. And Frank Blaine Norris, this came from Rita Cote, had given me this master's thesis. Frank Blaine Norris had done in 1972, and it ended up being an incredible resource.
I just going to ask you
double
about
R
that. Yeah.
Was the W, which is now the Canyon Ranch.
Thank you. Canyon Ranch. That's what it is now.
And so it's circled all the way around, and most of its years before being Canyon Ranch, it was the W. Phil Rothschild, who owned it, was a very good friend of my father's, so I could put the whole story back together.
Well, okay, let's take the example of what happened here. The property, because I grew up in Tankaverde for so long, in and around these guest ranches were held by Chicago, New York investors, people from all over the world, and then they started selling it off to developers, and next thing you know, they've got nowhere to ride the horses. And that right. shrunk it down. I mean, that was one of the big issues with Desert Willow. They couldn't sure. get access except up the creek for a little ways, and once they got to a certain spot, they were fenced out. And so, you know, they sold them off. But, no, Bob and you guys, you've got enough country out there that you will continue on. And I think that's just magnificent.
Thank God for national parks, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, that's right. I mean, Brownie had the foresight. He said, I got to get a ranch next to the public land. And my parents bought a ranch that was about a mile from public land, but we came in 65 and 68, they had the opportunity to buy that ranch that took us that mile over. And so now we have 2 miles of common fence with the National Park West. It's the longest continually held private boundary with a national park in the U.S. And that we have quite a bit of our own ranch, so we ride about 80-90% on our own ranch. But the ability to ride into the park is really important to us. And allows us those all-day rides, and people get to ride in a national park. Who gets to do that every day? Well, so that now, that does give us unique.
We have a caller, Harry? Oh. Yeah, let's take this caller. Tom, how are you, sir? Welcome to Voices of the West.
Good. Love your program. Love listening to you, Russell. Got a great place. I have a question about, was there a Kenyon ranch like Kenyon University down near Tubac at some yes. point in time, different than a Canyon yes. ranch?
Yes, and spelled like Kenyon, and it was named, Bill Allen built the ranch, and he had stayed at Circle Z, another fantastic historic ranch in southern Arizona, and enjoyed it so much that he went and bought, I'm going to say 160, 200 acres over there in the Tubac area, and got his friends, he was a Kenyon College alum, and they built that ranch, the first buildings out of stone themselves, and started Kenyon Ranch. And Kenyon Ranch was really a pretty hot destination for a long time. And it is still in existence, not run as a dude ranch, but run as a retreat center. And I have not been in there, but I'm told it looks pretty nice. Everything is been really kept up, and the same family's had it for a while.
Yeah, I think back in the 70s, they used that as a location for a kid's Dude Ranch series on television.
Well, I don't know. I know Tankaverde did Hey Dude for 4 or 5 years.
Maybe that's the one.
Yeah, Tankaverde did Hey Dude. They had a whole set there. I don't know about Kenyon Ranch as far as that goes. It was as many Dude Ranches were, by the way. I mean, the guest list is a pretty prominent list, especially in the 40s and 50s. But they were known to get a lot of stars down there.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things they were thought of.
Well, you've got
well,
Irene
you.
Dunn at the Desert Willow, Val Kimmer. That's interesting. Tell us about Val Kimmer, because he grew up on the KL Bar Ranch. And I guess his dad was a partner with the other guy.
Exactly. So Val Kilmer's parents, and I think the father, if I remember right, bought it for his mother. And so Val grew up in the old adobe house there. In fact, I spent today with one of the prior owners of KL Bar. He and his wife had it 10 years and really brought it back to a prominent dude ranch. Sadly, right now it's closed. The recession closed 5 ranches in the space of 08, 09, and unfortunately, none of them have reopened, but KL Bar is still there. It's outside Wickenburg. It's one of the originals. You know, it goes back to, I think, about 28.
Well, yeah, I know that during World War II, a lot of the dude ranches either shut down and went back to cattle operations or they just shut down altogether, but they came back. Do you think dude ranching will ever come back to any prominent degree?
Well, I don't think... It doesn't seem to me west-wide it'll ever come back to what it was. I mean, just because, you know, one big 400-room resort, it would, you know, it would take 20 Dude Ranches to equal the impact of that. So it's not going to have the same position. I mean, Dude Ranches kind of ran tourism in Tucson in the 40s, 50s, and 60s because they were the main destination where people with money and longer stays.
Well, are the working cattle ranches that are doing, you know, the cowboy experience, are they cutting into the market or are they adding to it? What's happening there?
I would say right now it's declined a little. That's kind of a part of our business that ebbs and flows. It's a hard business in good times. It's obviously a harder time in harder business in bad times. I believe that dude ranching will be around as long as regulation and government involvement in our business allows it, because people need to get away. People want, and not everybody, don't get me wrong, but a lot of people want real experiences in a place they haven't been. Dude ranches are universally almost in beautiful places or next to them. So that's the type of thing a lot of people want. Increasingly, as technology takes over their lives, they're going to want more and more of it. But it remains hard to run them. And they're small businesses, and they rely upon a lot of land and a few guests. So the formula is tight. But I think they're always going to be around.
Well,
but,
on a different note here, then this is something I think that Joe would be interested in. I was reading about the Rancho Robles and how they kind of specialized in hunting, because they offered bear, mountain lion, javelina deer, all kinds of stuff up there. In fact, your dad may have had something to do with that, with the mountain lion.
Grandfather, maybe.
Yeah. But, you know, I thought that's interesting because, you know, it's... You got to diverse in as much as you can.
Now, right. The question I've got is, okay, I worked on a ranch in the Babakivris, a guest ranch, and the owner's name was Mr. Miller.
Right.
What was that guest ranch? Elkhorn?
Elkhorn.
Elkhorn.
Still there.
He's still going.
Well, so you probably worked. Just, I'm going to guess, for Bob Miller.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago I did that. Their meeting room, guest room. It was a big dance hall, if you will.
Okay. Well, Bob was he older at the time? Or was
yes,
it
sir. And what was fascinating, he looked at me because after talking with him for a little while, I asked him, I said, are you still running cattle here? And he says, oh, I've got a couple of cows and a bull or two. In our conversation, he made reference to, the kids aren't as tough as they used to be. And I said, what do you mean? He says, I could buy kid horses all day long because kids used to ride all the time. He said, finding a totally bomb-proof kid horse today, if we can't find them, we have to make them. And I thought that was kind of fascinating. Now that has got to affect you and Tankaverde quite often, does it not?
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, we make our kids' horses. I mean, it's a very rare day that we buy one. We generally buy a nice horse, and we're not afraid of a little age, because with age comes wisdom, and that's true for horses as much as people.
Was Howard Miller any relation to the Miller down there, Bubba?
No. No, Howard Miller and the Miller family, going back, you worked probably for Bob, and Bob died, unfortunately, a year or so ago. And his family, he was second generation, lifetime dude rancher. And Jim Converse actually found his father that ranch, Ernie Miller. And Jim Converse and him had been doing some hunting in northern Mexico, southern Arizona together. And they bought what was called Fresno Ranch School. Well, the Millers bought it. And they started Elkhorn Ranch. They had Elkhorn Ranch, Montana, and they wanted to be doing the winter in Arizona this summer up there. Elkhorn Ranch, Montana still exists, run by one of Bob Miller's daughters, a good friend of mine, Linda. But Elkhorn down here is now run by Charlie and Mary. They have two daughters who are engaged in the business, and young girls, but going to college, and really dude ranchers. That's a dude ranch family right there, doing it right.
Yeah, he was a most gracious gentleman. And it was the off season when I was doing. Well, it was actually in the monsoon season when I was doing it, because I got stuck on the ranch there in between washes. And had to sit there for about
a bit of a road back there.
Yeah, I think we sat there for 6 hours waiting for the creeks to go down to get back to Tucson. But, you know, it's interesting how many guest ranches we had when I was a child. And now we're just down to the toughest of the tough, I'd have to say.
Well, it's you know, you generally see people like the Millers. You know, Jan Miller, Bob's wife, remains one of my favorite dude ranchers. She just epitomized it. And that whole family does it right, and they know how, and they know what they're in for, and there's no surprises really left for them. I mean, you get a little surprise here and there, but they know what they're doing. They'll be there as long as they want to be because they know how to do it. Coates, same thing, bigger scale. And then there's families that have some wealth, and they come in because they want to protect and support dude ranching, and then they've got to go find the people to run it. And that's hard because it's a 24/7 job, and they have to like people, know horses, and it's a broad spectrum of skills and experience, and not so many people have them. So it's a hard job.
What about Rancho de la Osa? It's supposedly got the oldest inhabited building in southern Arizona.
Continuous. The oldest continually used building in Arizona, 1720. It's funny, I was talking to Bob Vint yesterday, he's a famous architect who did the San Javier renovations and probably the preeminent expert on Southwest adobe structures. And he, oddly, had never seen the building, but he described what a 1700s, late 1600s, mission looked like, and of course I'm very familiar with the building at De La Osa, and it corresponds exactly. And I talked to him actually just coincidentally about the building, and he believes it very well could be and probably is, or at least potentially. Everything makes sense in terms of the dates, the anecdotes. I mean, he doesn't have any familiarity with it, but it is really an interesting ranch. There's more history at Rancho de la Osa than probably anywhere else in one spot in Arizona. It is truly an amazing place.
Oh, yeah. They've got Mrs. Nagy there guarding the store right there at the line. But
well, you know, it looks like Mexico.
Yes, it does. But here's we talk about the connections. The people that own that or did own it, I don't know if they own it anymore, their daughter was in my 4-H group. So I used to...
Were their names Davis?
I believe so.
Right. So they sold it 20 years ago to Richard and Veronica Schultz. And they retired and are interested in selling the ranch. There's going to be an auction next week. But they did an unbelievable job of restoring that ranch. It is really something to see.
Hey, partner, hang on. We got to go to break. Take us away, Harry.
Out of the clear blue of the western sky comes Sky King.
Voices of the West will be right back.
The end of the Civil War was near when quite accidentally a hero who sneezed abruptly ceased retreat and reversed into victory. His medal of honor pleased and thrilled his proud little family group. Some blood was spilled, and so it was planned. He commanded. F-troop.
Welcome back to Voices of the West.
And we're back. We're with author and guest ranch, dude ranch owner, Russell True. He's written this marvelous book, Dude Ranching in Arizona. You know, I'm on another page here, and it's so fascinating, the Faraway Ranch, which is now our Chiricahua National Monument. And I get to hunt the ranch right next door to it, just to the west of it. And that's kind of fascinating how those people had quite a guest ranch and then, bingo, sold out to the government. What do you know about that?
Well, Lillian Erickson, and that was one of the original ranches. I don't know why, as a kid, because I came in 65, and dude ranching was pretty darn hot at the time, and I knew of or knew a lot of the people, but I didn't hear that much about Far Away. But it was really, when you look back, really a prominent ranch. They started in 1916 or 17. The family had it, and basically, like a lot of these ranches, took a little bit of something and made it grow. And Lillian Erickson Riggs ran it from basically 1917, 1918 till she closed it, and then a couple years later sold it to the federal government. She closed it in 1970. So
wow.
That was quite a run. And she was largely deaf and grew to become pretty darn blind. And it was really interesting. I talked to a friend of mine the other day who knew her and talked about what a great lady she was. So that really is a ranch that has some really significant history.
Well, you know, I want to ask you about the role that the dude ranches played with the motion picture industry, because, you know, they have played a really important role, not just here in Arizona, but all throughout the West.
Well, now there's sort of the two sides of that. I mean, in terms of the motion picture industry, our ranch here, White Stallion, probably, and Lazy K being in there, and Circle Z, and certainly other ranches, Triangle T down in Dragoon and Texas Canyon has a huge motion picture and television history. But because of our proximity to Old Tucson and some really classic mountain backdrops and all the sorrel cactus, we've had 27 films shot either in large or small part here. I heard the Gene Autry music he shot last round up here in 48. Everybody from George Clooney to James Garner to, you know, the famous Winchester 73 with Jimmy Stewart shot here. Big part of getting dude ranching started at Rancho Linda Vista was the Mine with the Iron Door, which was written there and then shot there. Lazy K was in a lot of movies, Circle Z quite a few. So it has been and it's supportive and helpful of dude ranching. You know, the Mine with the Iron Door had a big impact in getting Rancho Linda Vista going. But also the stars came here.
Well, you know, Hacienda del Sol played a really, really big part in the trial of Billy Jack. It was almost a character in the film.
Really? I didn't know. But,
yeah.
You know, Hacienda del Sol, which is a spectacular property today, was a spectacular ranch, and the owner was one of my dad's closest friends, Bob Hartman. And he sold it when La Paloma developed because, you know, away when he's riding. But that spectacular property was tied in close with Hollywood, and they had a real A-list.
Well, you know, another thing, too, which a lot of people don't realize, is that when the picture companies would come to town, I don't know that the White Stallion ever did, but some of the other ranches, they would lease horses to the company if they really had a big call for a lot of livestock.
You know, we never did do that. I mean, as you guys know, we did the High Chaparral for the 4 years it was here, and we did a lot of movies, and we still do television shows all the time. And, you know, it's sort of classic Arizona, and we have the proximity and access. But it keeps dude ranching out there, and it, you know, it's important.
Yeah. Well, I think it's such a rich part of our heritage. And, you know, I can remember as a kid watching the Gene Autry and Roy Rogers movies, you know, with they always seemed to have a woody station wagon picking up the dudes in town and bringing them out to the ranch. And it's just, you know, we grew
absolutely
up with it.
Absolutely. Now, okay, tell us how people can get this wonderful book, my friend.
Well, the book just came out October 10th. We have it here at White Stallion, but we're a little off the beaten path for, of course, a lot of your listeners. You can get it on Amazon. It is available now. And as it starts to distribute out, it'll be in a lot of the gift stores and bookstores. But it did just launch 5 days ago. So the most secure, I guess, so you know it's available, would be Amazon today.
And we're going to try and get it out at the ranch for our gift shop, because it's so important. It's a part of the heritage of this area.
Now, I'd like to invite you. See, my good buddy Emil hit me. He outran me on this deal. I read your book, and I wanted to have you on the visit. I should like to extend an invitation later on for you to come on my show, and we can do another 2 hours. I swear to goodness.
This could be a series.
It could be a series. You did such a delightful job, and you covered everyone. The only one that I didn't find was El Cornelia, which was...
You know, I couldn't find any photographs, and I there were a few. I mean, there's quite a few when you think about it. I mean, there's probably... I mean, according to Frank Blaine Norris, there are 127 in the Tucson city limits at one time or another, and another 30 outside. So, I mean, there were a bunch. And so if I couldn't find photos or a story to connect, it didn't work. But maybe the next one.
Well, all righty. We've got somebody just said, were any of the Wanted Dead or Alive shows filmed there on your ranch?
Not at our ranch. We didn't do any of those.
Those were mostly shot in California around Mojave.
Mojave?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is just wonderful and fascinating. I hope to hook up with you, Russell, and you're always at the ranch, correct?
Yeah, I don't get too far away. We bought another ranch in Tombstone called Tombstone Monument Ranch, so we're... 90% of White Stallion and 10% down in Tombstone.
Well, you look across the San Pedro River there, buddy, and that's where my folks' ranch is.
Well, that's fantastic. We love it down there.
Yeah.
Cochise County is catching us.
Tell us one more time, how can we get the book and how can they get out there to White Stallion Ranch? Buddy, you get...
Well, White Stallion Ranch, and we do, not too surprisingly, I guess, have the book available here in our gift shop. But White Stallion Ranch is where Silver Bell, when you're heading west, you cross over the Tucson Mountains, turns into Twin Peaks Road. When you get there, you will see the signs into White Stallion Ranch. It's about 17 miles out of downtown Tucson. And Amazon.com has the book available.
All right, buddy.
Right on as anything. Thank
We're
you.
Out of time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Russell.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Voices of the West.